Stillman and Company is delivered by TriStar Moving, ESPN 102.5. The Game Fireball Hot Take Friday, day three of Titans training camp is in the books. Caroline Fenton is out today. Ian Safar is here. Hello, Ian.
Hello, hello.
So we have an absolutely loaded show, as we get you set again. Titans in training camp, day number three of training camp, rocking and rolling. And I knew, you know that feeling when you just know something's up? So I went to practice yesterday, second day. They didn't practice very well. First day, it was buzzing. It was first day of school vibes. Everybody was happy to be there. This team's been to the playoffs three of the last 4 years. Everybody pretty much knows each other now. It's like we've all been in school together, right? Like my second year on the air was Kevin Byard, Derrick Henry, their first year on the team. And now Ryan Tannehill's been here for a couple of years. Taylor Lewan's been here for a while. Like, it's almost like it's, you know, everybody's going back to school, going from the sixth grade to the seventh grade. Everybody knows each other. Mike Vrabel, this is his fourth year. I mean, again, it had back-to-school vibes to open it up. Then, after the back-to-school vibes yesterday, it had kind of a sloppy vibe to it. And I was like, okay, they got to have a better practice on Friday. And they got an email. I got an email from the Titans that said that practice was going to be from 9:30, an updated practice time. And I was thinking to myself, what's that mean? Updated practice time, and it said 9:30. And I'm like, well, that's odd that the updated practice time is at 9:30. What does that possibly mean? Because the original time was 9:32, and then I see, oh, it ends at 10:55 as opposed to 11:30, so they've cut off about 30 minutes practice. And then I got out there, and I saw A.J. Brown working out on an elliptical, and I said, okay, now I know what this is about. So today's practice was different than most practices. Very few good players participated in today's practice. No A.J. Brown, no Julio Jones, no Danico Autry, no Jeff Swaim, very little Derrick Henry. And I'm going to say guys that weren't there, but they might have been out there at the beginning in the warm-ups, but weren't actually practicing. No Taylor Lewan, no Ben Jones, no Kevin Byard, no Harold Landry. So it was very much a skeleton crew out there at practice. And I said to myself, okay, what are we going to get out of today's practice? So the good players who did participate, Ryan Tannehill, Anthony Firkser, Amani Hooker, Nate Davis, and I believe Rashawn Evans was out there at practice today. So it was almost like a spring training baseball game where the team has to go on the road. And I think the Major League Baseball rules dictate that you have to send three starters out there just to kind of, you know, the fans pay money to go to spring training games. So I don't need to see an entire minor league Red Sox team out there. You got to send three starters in every spring training baseball game. And that's what practice was like today. Again, Tannehill, Firkser, Hooker, Davis, not a bunch of big names out there. But I figured, okay, this is what's going to happen in today's practice. Is guys that belong on the team are probably going to separate themselves a little bit. At wide receiver, for example, where we know who the first three are and they weren't out there today. Who's 4, 5, and 6? How's that going to end up making itself? What about on defensive line? What about in the secondary? What about the guys who haven't popped yet? Like Christian Fulton, who through 2 days, now three, hasn't really flashed yet. I mean, he's a second-year guy, but there's a lot on his plate. We expect a lot of him, and he still really hasn't flashed. How is he going to perform? So that was how I approached today's practice. And it was much shorter, and there was probably more of an emphasis on special teams, and a little bit, they did some 7-on-7, they did some 11-on-11. And so here's what I got for you. Tannehill in 11-on-11 had a terrible throw for an interception right into the arms of Amani Hooker. Now, this is the second interception Amani Hooker's had of Tannehill in 3 days. One was because Chester Rogers didn't stick the route on Wednesday in the first practice. This one was one of two things. Either Cam Batson ran the wrong route or Tannehill just had a horrific interception right into the arms of Amani Hooker. Not good. Good for Hooker, though. In the first set of 11 on 11, DeShone Kizer didn't get a single rep. So we've talked about it this week about how through two practices, somebody asked into the text line yesterday, asked Caroline, or I guess asked me, from what I've seen in two practices, do I think the Titans have made up their mind? And I said, yes, it is Woodside over Kizer. And honestly, ask anybody who's been out there. Ask Joe Rexroad. Ask anybody who's been out there, and they will tell you it's not even close. And it's not. And today in the first 11 on 11, DeShone Kizer didn't get a single rep. Two guys stood out on offense today. One, obviously, Anthony Firkser, the only real skill player that is going to play a starting role for the Titans. Again, no Julio Jones, no A.J. Brown, very little Derrick Henry, no Josh Reynolds. But Anthony Firkser did stand out today. If you look at my Instagram story, you'll see one where they were doing kind of the warm-up drills for the tight ends. Firkser went up and high-pointed the football and came down with it, couldn't keep his feet in bounds. But I thought some of that was because of a bad throw. But you could tell Tannehill, without the other guys there, is really looking at Firkser. And they do have a good relationship as far as what we've seen over the last 2 years. The other guy that stood out on offense today is Marcus Johnson, number 88 at wide receiver. We've talked about him a lot over the first 3 days. And everybody that's covering the team, it's one of those things where we see Marcus Johnson. Marcus Johnson had two touchdowns yesterday in the red zone drills. And then today, watching Marcus Johnson, Tannehill wanted to give him the ball. And not only is he standing out to all of us on the side watching, but even Mike Vrabel brought it up today that Marcus Johnson is a guy who keeps standing out. Dylan Radins, the second round pick, he got more snaps today because a lot of the starters didn't go. But I'm just going to tell you all, he doesn't feel like a legitimate option to start at tackle right now. Maybe start at tackle ever, but he definitely, and it's early, let's be real, but he certainly doesn't feel like an option to start at tackle. I even asked Vrabel about Dylan Radins today, and Vrabel was kind of talking about, if you want to help the team, you got to play multiple positions. You got to, you know, the things you say about a backup, things that were never said about Jack Conklin when he was a rookie, things that were never said about Nate Davis when he was a rookie. That's kind of what Vrabel talked about with Dylan Radins. Ian, do we have the Dylan Radins one? Okay, so we'll get that for you. But Vrabel, I think, made it pretty obvious today that Dylan Radins has a far way to go. And as I said, I don't think he feels like an option for starting tackle. I still have not seen much from Des Fitzpatrick. So I keep looking at the receivers, and I'm starting to learn numbers. So everybody's got a little roster in front of them that they give you when you walk in, and it's got everybody's numbers. Now, look, we know who 17 is. We know who 22 is, 11, 2, 31, 77. We know who all those guys are. But when it comes to a lot of these new guys and a lot of guys that are practice squad-ish level guys, it takes a little bit to learn the jersey numbers. But the guys who stand out, when you keep saying, oh my God, who's 39? Oh my God, who's this guy? Who's, like, I know Marcus Johnson's 88. I know Chester Rogers is number 80 because those guys are standing out. I've had to look down at who's number 10. Oh, that's Des Fitzpatrick. And I still, even earlier today, was thinking, what number is Des Fitzpatrick again? I just haven't seen Des Fitzpatrick do anything. I mean, nothing. And this is a fourth-round pick that when they took him, they only had A.J. Brown and Josh Reynolds on the roster. And so there was a thought, hey, Dez is going to come in and have to play the slot right away. And I got to tell you, if they were to play a game today, Des Fitzpatrick is way down on the list of guys I trust. And I have not seen really anything from him except he had a drop right in front of Mike Vrabel in warmups. So it was a drill where they had four cones, and the wide receiver would run around the four cones and change direction, and then at the end they'd throw him the football, and nobody drops the ball. There's no defense. It's not even a hard, you know, tossed ball, and Des Fitzpatrick drops it right in front of Vrabel, which I certainly wouldn't want to do if I was a rookie either. Daniel Munyer, number 52, is the backup center. He fumbled the ball yesterday in a snap exchange with Tannehill, and he's really struggling to snap. So he had one fumble today with Tannehill, but seriously, no Ben Jones in there, bad snaps all day. And let's not kid ourselves. what is the one job of the starting center in the NFL, or even the backup center, or anybody who plays center? When you hear the word hike, you snap it to the quarterback and you make sure he gets the football. And Munyer has struggled with that consistently over the last 2 days. I said to Joe Retrode out there, look, if I was general manager of the team, I'd probably cut him today. They brought in Spencer Pulley from Vanderbilt, a backup offensive lineman, a backup center after yesterday's fiasco. I probably, if I was general manager, I'd probably be calling Daniel Munyer into the office. This is the first guy, no disrespect to Daniel Munyer, this is the first guy that I'd cut. That I've been there for 3 days, I'd cut him. I've seen enough. Although there are some other guys that are definitely, DeShone Kizer and Blake Hobiel are probably getting the cut too. But just not right now, but eventually. I didn't think today was an incredibly insightful practice, nor did I think they got a lot of good done. You know, Tannehill was out there, which was good, but I don't think they got a lot done. I think they were giving other guys, these rookies or maybe backups, they were giving them the opportunity to play today, and I'm not sure they did much. I'm not sure they really accomplished much. Chester Rogers continues to kind of stand out a little bit. Marcus Johnson, as I brought up, continues to stand out a little bit. And I was a little surprised that after the bad kicking performance that we saw yesterday from both Blake Hobiel, from Blake Hobiel and Tucker McCann, I was surprised they didn't go back out there to kick. So I thought there was a chance that at the end of practice, Vrabel would call them out to kick because they had a bad day yesterday. Vrabel did not send them out to kick today, which I was surprised by. And I do wonder if Vrabel wants those guys to stew on the fact that they were pretty bad yesterday. So think about how kicking is all mental, and you have a bad day yesterday. You know, we were talking about it. Everybody's talking about it because kicking is one thing that's pretty easy to figure out in a practice. You know that they were thinking about it. They've been over it. They probably watched their kicks. They probably talked. Apparently there's a new coach on the coaching staff, James Wilhoit, the former Tennessee kicker. Apparently he's the kicking coach, even though Vrabel doesn't have a title for him. And I'm guessing they worked with him, watching it, discussing it, whatever. But as the old saying goes, when somebody gets punished, you need a little time to think about what you did. I wonder if that's what Vrabel was doing today. Hey, we're not going to kick because you guys were bad yesterday. We're not going to kick today. So you can think about what you did and tomorrow go out there and try to kick. So those were kind of my big takeaways from Titans practice. Again, finding it a little surprising, and I know Mike Vrabel, a couple years ago, we gave him the nickname Coach Cautious for how he would approach using guys in training camp. And I understand that we are still over a month away from the first game. And I get it that this team is going to be defined by what happens in November, December, January, or February, more so than it will be determined what happens in July or August. But I'm still just a little surprised that after two practices, Mike Vrabel's like, we need to take the day off for the most part for a lot of these guys. So AJ, take it off. Julio, take it off. Swaim, take it off. Autry, take it off. Henry, take it off. Simmons, take it off. Lawan, take it off. Ben Jones, take it off. Kevin Byard, take it off. Everybody except for Tannehill, Firkser, Hooker, Nate Davis, and I think Rashawn Evans, take it off, everybody. I was just a little surprised by that. But again, all in all, I think the one thing that stood out through 3 days is they've got to find a spot on the team for Marcus Johnson as a wide receiver. This guy, every day, I'm like, 88, 88. I don't even look anymore to see who 88 is because I know which one number 88 is. So those are kind of my opening thoughts on practice today. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Calls and texts, and I will be, I guess I'm manning the text line today. It's like old times, no Caroline here. Coming up next, there is a development from Indianapolis Colts camp that absolutely will transcend the AFC South. If it is an issue, we are going to monitor it closely. We'll get to that coming up next. Fireball Hot Take Friday. We are live from the Wholesaling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. You can put the show on YouTube, where you can see yours truly's very, very handsome face. Right here, just go YouTube, 1025 The Game, 102, or YouTube, Stillman and Company. If you want to watch the show at home, just boom, put it right there. I was telling somebody today, I was like, you know, cable is so expensive nowadays. Even if you're kind of a cord cutter, cable is expensive. But think about how all those ESPN studio shows and all those Fox shows, they don't ever talk about the Titans. So our shows are up there on demand post practice. I'm the only afternoon radio show host in Nashville that's going out to practice. And it's right there on YouTube free of charge. Stillman and Company, we are delivered by TriStar Moving. It's ESPN 102.5 The Game, and we're streaming on the Game Nashville app.
Carson Wentz not practicing today because of a foot injury. My understanding is the hope and the belief right now is that it's just minor. That being said, they are going through the process, I am told, of evaluating it. So that would mean all the imaging and everything that would come with it to get to the bottom of why he's experiencing whatever soreness led him to sit out today. But fingers crossed in Indianapolis that it is a minor issue for Carson Wentz.
And it's early, and it's okay to have the backups get some playing time, and you don't want to rush anything similar to the Cowboys with Dak.
There you go. That was Mike Garofolo, Ian Rappaport on NFL Network. And you heard right there, Carson Wentz injured his foot in practice on Thursday. It was announced he'll miss practice today in Indianapolis. This just in, Mike Garofolo, NFL Network, saying, quote, update on Colts quarterback Carson Wentz. He will see noted foot specialist Robert Anderson in the near future, sources tell me and Ian Rappaport. A firmer timeline will be established at that point. For now, the team is taking solace in week one still being 6 weeks away. Rappaport follows it up on Twitter by saying all options are on the table, including a minor surgical procedure. The hope is to avoid it, but it's possible. Either way, if Carson Wentz misses games, it's not likely to be many. So let's think about this for a second. First off, Ian, you remember how nervous Floyd was anytime it came to a foot injury.
Do not like that.
He does not like feet injuries. Now,
too many small bones.
And I think the Mike Wells, who covers the Colts for ESPN, like TD does here, I think Mike Wells says it's a ligament. So there
not
is
a bone issue. Okay. That could be something different.
But I'm sure we don't know for sure if it's a ligament or a bone. But if it's a bone, that's a big deal. We've seen guys that have injured the bones in their feet, and sometimes they're never the same. So those metal tarsals, and remember Javon Kearse. Javon Kearse may be, you know, a Hall of Famer if he doesn't break his foot. So here's Wentz in Indianapolis, who's got almost no time outside of OTAs with his teammates. He's coming from Philadelphia, where, surprise, surprise, the guy could never stay healthy. And he's got to fix his reputation. And part of his reputation is that he's not a good leader. So here comes Carson Wentz into Indianapolis. Everybody in Indianapolis was saying all the right stuff. Oh, yeah, he's just been awesome in this offseason program. Carson, he brings the leadership. But I think they all know that we all know that leadership and team building and those haven't been his strengths in the past. And I think we all know that staying healthy has not been a strength of Carson Wentz in the past, which is also bad. So I'm starting to look at this, and I've been skeptical of Carson Wentz from the very, very, very beginning. Very skeptical. I don't think he's a good enough leader. I think there's a lot of fire where there seems to be a lot of smoke as far as ex-Eagle players or players that he was teammates with who decided to be anonymous at the time in Philadelphia that questioned Wentz's leadership. The fact that the team played better with Nick Foles at quarterback at times, that they played better with Jalen Hurts at quarterback. I was always skeptical of Carson Wentz in Indianapolis. But now think about this. The Indianapolis Colts are the only viable threat to the Titans in the AFC South. We know that Houston is an unmitigated disaster right now, where the only thing they have is a star quarterback who might be a predator. The Jacksonville Jaguars have a rookie quarterback and a rookie coach, and I actually have more faith in the rookie quarterback than I do the rookie coach. And then there's Indianapolis. And I think Indy's got a lot of problems. If Wentz is healthy, I still think Indianapolis has some problems. Do you know who their backup quarterback is, Ian?
Eason?
It is Jacob Eason is their backup quarterback in Indianapolis. So he and Sam Ellinger, who stunk at Texas, those two are taking the reps right now with Carson Wentz hurt. That's not very good. So I think this is a terrible sign for the Indianapolis Colts. And I think it's terrible for two reasons. One, a lot of us think Carson Wentz can't stay healthy. And I know it's weird in sports how a broken bone is a broken bone. And if you turn your elbow a certain way and you land on it, I mean, that elbow is going to break. But there's nothing to say that my elbow is stronger than your elbow. I have never, outside of my nose, which I injured kayaking when I was 13, I have never broken a bone in my body. I have never broken a leg. I have never broken a foot. I have never broken an arm. I have never broken, I've never broken anything. I've never torn anything. Now, I played sports growing up, and I exercise regularly now, but I didn't play in the NFL. But I've never torn anything, like an ACL, MCL, you name it. Carson Wentz seems to always get hurt. So that's the first thing we're looking at Indianapolis. The guy comes to Indy, you know, fresh start, not going to be the same issues. The new Carson already hurt his foot 3 days in. The second thing is, how much we hear Ian Rappaport and Mike Garofalo saying, Wentz maybe won't miss a lot of games. Maybe Wentz misses some games. Who knows? I don't think it's a good idea, if I were the Indianapolis Colts, to have my starting quarterback miss all of training camp. But when I hear Ian Rappaport and Mike Garofalo, not that those guys have any insight on something that they haven't been told. They are not feet specialists. They are not doctors. They're not even Rex Ryan. So when it comes to, you know, their prognosis, it's really all based upon what they're hearing. But the fact that they're talking about, hey, if Wentz has to miss games, it's likely not many. That probably says that his future with training camp might be in doubt. And I don't know how Indianapolis builds the kind of team that they are supposed to build with Carson Wentz as their quarterback. This guy cannot stay healthy. And I know this is going to be crazy. And we all said, we've already made our expectations, and I projected the Titans to go 13-4 and win the AFC South. But if Indianapolis has a quarterback problem, which many people are assuming that Carson Wentz will go back to how good he was before he first ever got hurt. But if Indianapolis has a quarterback problem, then we really need to not worry about the division. Then we really need to start thinking about the Ravens, the Steelers, the Browns, the Chiefs, the Bills. I mean, how many teams, if Carson Wentz is hurt, how many teams are there that the Titans would consider on their level in the AFC? Nobody in your division. I think we can all agree Pittsburgh has taken a humongous step back. So it really feels like it's Cleveland, Baltimore, Buffalo, and Kansas City. Maybe there's a mystery team in there. Maybe the Dolphins are good this year. I doubt it. Maybe the Broncos are good this year. I doubt that too. But that really seems to be it. Maybe the Chargers. But that is big news to keep an eye on out of Indianapolis. What is going on with Carson Wentz? And again, what does this injury to Carson Wentz mean? Let's forget about the length of time that he might miss, because we have no idea. Let's take that out. And let's think about Carson Wentz and the fact that the guy never is healthy. Torn ACL in 2017, the year that they went to the Super Bowl and won it with Nick Foles as the quarterback. A back injury kept Wentz out of the playoffs. The next year, Nick Foles again took over as quarterback. 2019, he actually made it through most of the season, got concussed and knocked out of a playoff game, one and done for Philadelphia. Last year, I don't think he got hurt, but they were terrible. He was terrible, and he got benched for Jalen Hurts. I believe he broke his wrist his last year at North Dakota State. This seems to be a problem with Wentz. Now he shows up in Indy, and we're told, no, 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 this is a new Carson. Fresh start for Carson Wentz. This is a new era. And he's already hurt. 615-737-1025 is our phone number, 615-737-1025. We will get your reaction on all of that, 615-737-1025. And I do wonder this. If Wentz is hurt for an extended period of time and misses training camp, does Indianapolis have any chance of competing with the Titans? Ian, do you think Indianapolis has any chance of competing with the Titans if Wentz is hurt?
Probably not. No, not with Jacob Eason as their starter.
Is that not amazing to think about? Like, well, I mean, think about the Patriots.
Would they feel the same way without Tannehill? You know, would the Colts say the same thing if Tannehill got hurt? Probably, right?
Sure. I think we'd feel that way.
Yeah.
I mean, I've watched Logan Woodside and DeShone Kizer now for 3 days. DeShone Kizer can't play. And I love DeShone Kizer because he's a nice guy. He really is. And I hope that, you know, this is just a minor setback for Kizer and he'll perform well the rest of camp and earn a job on the practice squad or with somebody else. But I'm being realistic over here. DeShone Kizer's not very good. But with Logan Woodside, if he has to go into a game, first of all, Vrabel and Robinson seem to believe in him because they gave Trevor Siemian a crack to take his job last year and he didn't do it. And they were prepared 17 times last year to put Logan Woodside in a game if something happened to Ryan Tannehill. Like, that was a possibility, that if Tannehill gets hurt, Logan Woodside's going in. So they were okay with that possibility. But if Logan Woodside has to play quarterback for the Titans, he's at least been here for a while, unlike Wentz in Indianapolis. But he's got Julio Jones, A.J. Brown, and Derrick Henry. And I like Jonathan Taylor in Indianapolis, but he ain't Derrick Henry, at least not yet. And I like T.Y. Hilton, but he's past his prime. And Michael Pittman Jr. seems to be okay, but he ain't A.J. Brown. So I think it probably makes it a little bit more difficult. Eason was there last year, but Logan Woodside's been in the league for 3 years. 615-737-1025. We'll get your reaction on that. But it looks like, and I still don't think the AFC South's going to be competitive, even if Wentz does play. But again, that's the new news out of Indianapolis. We will keep our eyes on that. Wentz going off to go see a foot specialist somewhere else. Who knows how long that means he'll be out. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Chris Sanders will join us later this hour. But coming up next, there is a Titans player who I'm used to training camp hype, but what I heard one of the veteran leaders say today about him, I think surprised me. We'll get to that coming up next. Stillman and Company on a Fireball Hot Take Friday, ESPN 1025 The Game. And, of course, we are, as always, streaming on the Game Nashville app.
The biggest challenge for a pass-catching tight end, a guy like Ferk, you know, as he maybe tries to transition to more blocking, what are the biggest things he needs to kind of focus on in that regard?
You know, I think when you give up, you know, a size element, you know, it comes down to technique, it comes down to finish, it comes down to, you know, a lot of just – you know, nuances that maybe he is going to not be able, you know, he has to be really good with just to be able to block at the point of attack. And he's working hard at that. And that's something that he's focusing on and then we're focusing on so that we can use him in a lot of different areas.
That was Mike Vrabel talking about Anthony Firkser today, Titans tight end. And again, very limited attendance today at practice. Firkser was one of the main guys. I compared this again to a spring training baseball game. Major League Baseball rules indicate if you're going to play a road spring training baseball game, you have to take three starters with you. Three starters have to play. For the Titans today, they had Tannehill at camp, they had Firkser at camp, they had Nate Davis at camp, they had Amani Hooker at camp, and I believe they had Rashawn Evans. So that was pretty much it. The rest were all guys that we would assume or slate to be backups. But then I saw Firkser make a good grab or two, and he was one of the higher-graded players today at camp. But then Kevin Byard got to the podium. And Kevin Byard, first of all, is one of the best ambassadors that you could ask your team to have. I mean, a very, very good guy. I mean, he's incredibly philanthropic. He's a good player. He's got a great smile. He's got great energy. You can see the team feed off of him. Vrabel was effusive about his leadership today. He talked about being a better leader today. But Kevin Byard's been around the block. And Kevin Byard knows that when he says something, that it's probably going to get picked up. People listen to what he has to say. Remember when he said before a Patriots playoff game, they need to make Tom Brady look like Blake Bortles? I'm sure Kevin Byard heard, hey, maybe don't say things like that about Tom Brady before you play Tom Brady. Lesson learned. So today, and the question in and of itself about Firkser that was asked to Kevin Byard, I wasn't really surprised about, but Byard's assertiveness with his answer was eye-opening to me. Here's what happened today at camp.
How have you seen Anthony Firkser develop in your time here, and how do you think he's equipped going into the season?
I mean, Firkser is a top flight tight end in my opinion. Like I said, I've went against Delaney my first couple of years, and then John New as well. I will definitely put Firkser right up there. You know, honestly, I think that, you know, the dynamics of our offense right now, when you got Julio and AJ and you got Derek, you know, that's the main focal points. You know, I think working that middle of the field, I think Firkser's going to have a day or, you know, have a year, not making any predictions or anything he's going to do. But I am excited about what he's going to be able to do this year because, I mean, I worked out with him a few times at Lipscomb, so I know the type of work that he's been putting in. I know he's super excited to have the opportunity that he's having this year, but like you said, with John departing.
So let's think about this. Kevin Byard, again, he's been around the block. He knows that when you say something like, I expect Anthony Firkser to be a top-flight tight end, he knows people are going to pick up on that. He knows people are going to talk about that. So that's why I was sitting in my chair. I mean, I'm directly right in front of Kevin Byard. If you're looking at the stream, what I'm looking at you is basically how I'm looking at Byard. And I'm sitting there today, and Byard says that, and I literally, like, raise my eyes, like, wait a minute, what? Top flight tight end. And then I was reminded about what Delaney Walker said a couple of weeks ago on Talking with TD, when he told Teron Davenport he thinks Firkser's going to be elite. Now, I'm not a huge believer that everybody that played the game, or in this case, plays the game, I'm not convinced that everybody who plays the game knows everything there is to know about football. Tony Romo, for example, was criticized for years and years and years for his decision-making. As soon as he becomes a broadcaster and lets you behind the curtain a little bit, all of a sudden everyone's like, oh my God, Tony Romo knows everything. Yeah, that's usually how most players are. So I don't think that every great ex-player becomes a good coach or anything like that. But I trust Delaney Walker's opinion. And as we learned a couple of weeks ago, Delaney Walker is a tell-it-like-it-is kind of guy. And he says Anthony Firkser is going to be elite this year. And Kevin Byard, again, a guy who knows what he's saying when he says it, without hesitation, says, oh, he's going to be a top-flight tight end. And I'm thinking to myself, first of all, Anthony Firkser does look bigger this year. And Anthony Firkser, just like Amani Hooker, I think attacked the opportunity that is given to him. Anthony Firkser is the starting tight end of the Tennessee Titans, and it's not even close. There is not another option to start at tight end on this team. We thought, Firkser's not much of a blocker, so they'll go out and they'll sign a tight end. Maybe Gerald Everett from the Rams, maybe Jared Cook from the Saints, one-year deal. Nope. We thought, okay, in the second round, they're going to draft the tight end. Maybe Tommy Tremble out of Notre Dame, maybe Brevin Jordan out of Miami. Nope. They didn't even draft the tight end. Well, you know, I think once June 1st cuts come, maybe they'll swing a trade for Zach Ertz, or maybe they'll pick up somebody. Nope. Anthony Firkser is the starting tight end of the Tennessee Titans. He was one of the offseason players of the year, according to Mike Vrabel. And now Delaney Walker and Kevin Byard are both putting their reputations on the line, putting their hands in the air, saying they think Anthony Firkser is going to be either elite or top flight. And I would argue that those two things mean the exact same. And I asked this question to Titan fans out there, without getting too excited about something that we're not sure of 3 days into camp. What if they're right? What if Anthony Firkser is, and he's never going to be Kelce, he's never going to be Kittle, he's never going to be that kind of guy. But what if he's Frank Wycheck? Frank Wycheck, a waiver claim from the Washington football team, comes in into the Oilers, predominantly running team, and it all of a sudden becomes Steve McNair's favorite target. What if he is that guy in an offense with A.J. Brown, Julio Jones, Derrick Henry, and Josh Reynolds? The other thing that it should be noted as far as Firkser is concerned is we've seen him now for 3 years. We saw him as a nobody had ever heard of lighting up training camp and a just horrific preseason game with the Steelers in which he was the only positive. We've seen him on the practice squad. We've seen him make his way off the practice squad to having somewhat of a minor role on the team. We've seen him become the backup, pressed into more duty quicker than expected because Delaney Walker broke his leg. we've seen him kind of have to take over a little bit with the number two with Jonnu Smith. And we've never heard a negative word from him. No attitude. No, I deserve the ball. We've seen him win you a playoff game at Foxborough, catching a touchdown against the Patriots, the big third and eight from Tannehill. And now Kevin Byard and Delanie Walker say he's not only ready for the next step to start, he's ready for the next step to be great. And if you get that with his positive attitude, you then start to wonder, okay, can this offense be one of those offenses? The greatest show on turf, Rams, Peyton Manning's Indianapolis Colts. You really do wonder it. Solid offensive line, two-star receivers, the best running back in the NFL, an efficient quarterback, and now a guy that they are just raving about, and Anthony Firkser. Former Titans receiver Chris Sanders will join us next. A lot to break down from the first 3 days of training camp. We will do that with Chris next. Fireball Hot Take Friday, Stillman and Company, right here, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Hey, we are bringing you Nashville's best coverage of Titans training camp, presented by Farm Bureau Health Plans, Frontier Basement Systems, the all things basementy company, the Trenches Shop in North Nashville, and the Cut Truck Mobile, Nashville's new barbershop on wheels. You have control of the time and place. Book your appointment at the Cut truckmobile.org. Chris Sanders next. Stillman and Company. It's ESPN 102.5 The Game on a Fireball Hot Take Friday, and we're streaming on the Game Nashville app. Stillman and Company, Fireball Hot Take Friday. We'll be giving away something in the next hour. ESPN 94.9 is the official English radio home of the Nashville Soccer Club. Listening this Sunday as Nashville SC takes on Toronto. Pre-game 6:15. The match is at 6:30. At training camp, I've gotten to this point now where they give you a roster every time you walk in. It's a big, long legal sheet. In fact, if you're looking at the stream, you can see it's got the alphabetical roster, which I don't know who uses that, and the numerical roster, which pretty much everybody uses. I guess if you're looking for which one's Christian Fulton, then you go down to the F's and you can see. But for the most part, I look at a play, and then I'm like, who's that number right there? And I go through the day, I'm like, okay, this guy. I'm starting to learn numbers of guys that are not the better known players. We all know 22, we all know 2, we all know 11, we all know 77, 31, 17. There's this one guy, 88, Marcus Johnson, who just keeps popping up every time. He used to be on the Colts, was on the practice squad for a little bit last year, and he just keeps popping up. And I remember a pregame show 2 years ago, Chris Sanders, a former Titans receiver, is our guest. I remember a pregame show 2 years ago, Chris yeah. Sanders, where Indianapolis yeah. had nobody. And during a break, you turned to me looking at their yes. depth chart and you said, who is a Marcus Johnson? And then you started on the pregame show telling people, oh, I'm worried about Marcus Johnson. And I'm like, who the hell is Marcus Johnson? And Chris, I've been out at practice all three yeah. days, and I keep seeing 88 make yes, plays, sir. And I'm looking at this yep. team at that position. We know that they're locked in with four, with mm-hmm. A.J. Brown, Julio Jones, Josh Reynolds, and Des Fitzpatrick in the fourth round. Yeah. A.C. McMath is probably going to make the team as a special teams player. That's five. They can't carry nine receivers. But, Chris, okay. I can't stop watching this guy make touchdown catches, whether it's Tannehill, Woodside. He keeps popping in camp. Yeah. What do you make of that and maybe the what feels like a loaded receiver room the Titans have?
Oh man, it's loaded. I love that. You know, especially being a wide receiver, you get to watch the battles that are going on. I don't know if you remember a guy named Drew Bennett, a guy who came in and played quarterback. He really played quarterback in college a little bit and then transitioned in playing wide receiver. The reason why he made that team when I was there is because he kept showing up on film. And when you have Johnson showing up on film and consistently making plays and your quarterback has faith in you, I'm telling you, that's a big step. And you talked about it earlier, Jared. The wide receiver room is very crowded. I know you talked about A.J. Brown, Julio Jones. You forgot about Batson. You got Fitzpatrick. You got Westbrook. You got all these guys. And I think, and you may correct me on this, I think the odd man out on this one is I think Josh Reynolds is not going to be there. And the reason why I say that is I study wide receivers. I watch what they do. I watch what they do coming out of the break, chest over the knees, how to get off the spot. He has the least amount of explosiveness out of all the wide receivers. So, man, it's going to be interesting if they're going to keep seven, they're going to keep five.
But just like 1999, we kept seven receivers because every receiver in that room was very, very explosive.
Mm-hmm. It's funny you say that because I keep looking down, you know, plays will be made and I'll put a little plus or a minus by it. And there are the two guys that have stood out to me are Marcus Johnson and Chester Rogers. Now, they both have experience in Indianapolis. Chester Rogers was back there today fielding punts. Right now, Vrabel said it, there's three guys in the punt returning role. It's Cam Batson, Mason Kinsey, and Chester Rogers. And Rogers has been by far the best of those three. I really wonder, Chris, where they feel, to your point about Josh Reynolds not making the team. We know how they feel about A.J. Brown and Julio Jones. Those guys are obviously going to be on the team. Dez Fitzpatrick's obviously going to be on the team because they took him in the fourth round. Right. Racy McMath, they project, is a gunner, and I think there's a lot to work with there. So let's say he makes it. I don't know how you can see Marcus Johnson and Chester Rogers make plays for you in camp and then just totally dismiss it when it comes time to building your roster. But we also know that they love Nick Westbrook-Akina. So there's a lot of guys there, but I don't know how you can look at the guy who keeps making plays every day in camp and then saying, no, thank you.
Yeah, but see, here's the thing. I mean, you named a whole bunch of names, but which guy is versatile? When I say has a lot of versatile, is he can do so many things. I mean, you named Chester Rogers. He can do kickoff return, he can do punt return. But if you're just a guy that's making plays and you can only play just wide receiver, that's a negative, because when you have a guy that can do special teams and also play wide receiver, it's 2-1. So that's what it's going to come down to. It's going to come down to numbers. And the guys that are going to make the team that's in that lower tier is a guy that can do so many things. And we talked about Chester Rogers that can do punts and kickoff returns. So I think they're going to really kick him because he brings so many things to the table. But then you got, I don't know if you mentioned Cody Hollister. I mean, he's making plays. I mean, everybody's making plays around the board. But the guy, the late receivers that we're talking about is the guys that can do so many things, not just playing wide receiver, but also playing special teams.
Chris, Kevin Byard today says he expects Anthony Firkser to be a top-flight tight end this year. Delanie Walker said a couple of weeks ago on Talking with TD that he thinks Firkser can be elite. You played with Frank Wycheck, a guy who I don't think many people expected to go to the Pro Bowls that he did when he was claimed by the organization. What do you think about Firkser and the fact that, you know, Byard and Delanie, they've been around. They're not guys that are just throwing it out there. And what does it mean for the offense if Firkser does not only take the next step of being a starter, but takes an even bigger step of being a high-end tight end?
Man, the reason why he's going to be really, really huge is because of A.J. Brown and Julio Jones. And the reason why I say that is a lot of teams are going to be paying attention to those two guys and also Henry. So now he's going to get a lot of one-on-one coverage with the safety, one-on-one coverage with a linebacker. And look at the routes that he ran when they did the tight end camp at Lipscomb. He's running his routes with a little more authority and a little more burst off the cut. So he enhances his route running. He's bursting off the cut. He's separating from the safety and the linebacker even more. But the one thing that he definitely has to improve on, and we talked about this during the show last year and we talked about it this year, is he has to improve on his blocking. So if he improves on his blocking and then also add that with his route running and also making plays like he did last year, I agree with you 100%. He can take it to the next level. Why? It's because you have A.J. Brown, Julio Jones, that they're commanding attention and they're going one-on-one with Ferguson. So that's why I think he's going to have a fantastic year.
Chris, there is a lot of optimism in the air at training camp. I feel like that's something I probably say every year. I've been to more practices this year than I normally, you know, I don't go every day. I've been every day so far this year. As a player, when you're there for the first week like they are, how do you kind of suppress the excitement and focus more so on the work? And what would you take away from camp as a player 3 or 4 days in?
You know, you always go in there. I mean, it's just good to be out there. It's good to be around the teammates you haven't seen in a long, long time. But all that stuff wears out the first or the second day. And I think once that wears off, it's about, you know, understanding each other. And because you got a lot of new guys. You got Autry from Indianapolis. You got Dupree that came from Pittsburgh. You got guys that haven't really played together. So once the excitement wears off and once the thrill wears off, then all of a sudden it's about building a team. It's about building a culture and about building and trusting each other. And I think that's what they're doing. And just listening to the press conferences of Mike Vrabel and J. Rob and listening to, you know, the defense, it's all about it's all about business. We understand that everybody's excited. We understand that it's the beginning of, you know, training camp. But at the end of the day, it's about building a team, building a winning culture, guys knowing each other, defense trusting each other. You got the offense trusting each other. You got, you know, all these guys, all these new guys, you know, coming to a culture that, that Mike Vrabel is building, and all of them have to trust each other from the offense to the defense to special teams.
Former Titans receiver Chris Sanders is our guest here on the program. Caleb Farley has not practiced yet because of the back injury. Man. Dylan Raidens. Mike Vrabel today talked about how he needs to find a role on this team, perhaps being versatile and playing all four spots. But basically the way he said it made it sound like he's not an option right now to start at tackle. When should I be worried about the rookies, Chris?
Like, absolutely now. I mean, we should be worried now because, you know, I understand that Farley's hurt and I understand that Raidens has to play a lot of different positions. But the one thing I'm really concerned about Farley is he's not getting any reps. When you're not getting any reps, how is Byer going to trust you? How is Jack Rabbit Jennings going to trust you? How are they going to trust you if you haven't been on the field to get those reps? Those are important reps. I understand you have mental reps. I understand you watch film. I understand you're a smart player. But Farley doesn't understand the speed of the game right now. He's got to understand these offensive coordinators are very, very smart. And if they see that you don't handle the speed and they see that you don't pick up what they're doing, you're going to get exposed. So that's what I'm really concerned. And then another thing that I'm concerned about that we're really not talking about is Dupree. I mean, I don't know if Dupree has really been on the field. He really hasn't been out there. So how is he going to understand the defense without getting all these reps? So I just think that I'm worried a little bit. I'm not in a panic mode right now, but I am a little worried because some of your impact players are not on the field.
Chris Sanders with us. What did you make of Tannehill's comments on the vaccine that basically he only got it because he wanted to be around the teammates and the NFL is making really strict rules that if you are not vaccinated, that you can't be around your teammates in a normal capacity. You can't eat with the team in the lunchroom. You can't be inside the meeting rooms. I mean, I said it. The NFL is bullying players to get the vaccine.
They
and in the case of Tannehill, it worked. What do you make of Tannehill's comments and the fact that Mike Vrabel said the other day that this really isn't about vaccines and it's not about what you believe or not believe, but it's about health and taking care of yourself and your teammates?
You know what, Jared? I don't think they really bully Tannehill. I just think Tannehill wants to win. So we always talking about a guy being a great leader, a guy that wants to be the pillar of your team. So when you have Tannehill taking the first step, say, you know what? I may not agree with this. I may not agree with taking a shot, but if I take the shots and get vaccinated, then, you know, maybe other guys will follow suit and say, you know what? Whatever it takes to win. So I don't think it's really bullying. I just think that Tannehill's one of those guys that, number one, he's a team player. Number two, he consistently wants to do the right thing. So if he consistently wants to do the right thing and he gets vaccinated, I think a lot of guys are going to follow suit. Why? Not because they agree with it. Not because it goes against their religion or whatever it is. It's because they want to do the right thing and they want to be committed to the team. So that's the reason why I think he got vaccinated.
Last thing for you, Chris Sanders. Derrick Henry yesterday asked ad nauseum about 2,000 yards, trying to do it again, three-time rushing champion. You know Derrick said he doesn't think about it, only prepared on the work, focused on what's ahead. You think Derrick's thinking about it?
Nah, not at all. I mean, reason why I love Derrick, I really believe that because I listened to his interview, and he's not just saying the coach words or, you know, just saying the cliches. I mean, he really wants to win. I understand the 2,000 yards are great. He wants to win another rushing title. All that stuff is great. You can have all those accolades, but if your focus is just doing that and not getting to the Super Bowl and win it, then basically you're being a selfish player. And I really believe that Derrick Henry is not a selfish player. He understands he has the chance to get 2,000 yards. He understands that he maybe wants to win it. But what's the vision of the team? The vision of the team is me knowing my role as of Derrick Henry, saying I'm going to go out there and make plays and put the team on my back. And if the chips fall to where I get 2,000 yards and the chips fall to where I win another rushing title, then so be it. He's not that type of guy of saying, you know what, I want the rushing title. I want to get 2,000 yards. He's a guy that says, I want to win. I want to do my job. I want to know my role, and I want to take my team to a Super Bowl. And that's why he's a pillar of this Tennessee Titans football team.
Chris Sanders, former Titans receiver, as always, joining us on the program. Chris, we will talk to you next week.
Appreciate you, man. Hey, man, why you haven't called me in a while, man? I just went to camp with my football team. I'm going to get a call, no love, and how you doing? Nothing, man.
You haven't called me?
Dude, you be surfing every other week.
No, I surfed once One time, although I am thinking about going back on Sunday, so I guess there is something to that. Chris Sanders,
Thank you, bro, always.
Appreciate it. We'll talk soon.
You too, my man. You take care. Bye-bye.
Yep, Chris Sanders joining us on the program. Ian, you agree with Chris? You think Derrick Henry isn't thinking at all about 2,000 yards or a third rushing title?
I would think he's thinking more about the rushing title than the 2,000 yards in particular. I think he would love to lead the league in rushing again.
I wonder if leading the league in rushing going forward is 2,000 yards with a 17th game.
You might have a point there. Maybe at least 1,500.
So that's why I think 2,000 is possible, because of the 17th game. Mm-hmm. If this were a normal year, I wouldn't think that 2,000 is possible. Coming up next, I got it all graded out. Who were the top performers today at practice? Who struggled today at practice for the Titans? And a couple of guys ended up with a net zero, but we'll have to discuss them too. That's next. Stillman & Company, Fireball Hot Take Friday. It's ESPN 102.5 The Game.